Okay, so, anyways, so thank you for having me. Thanks, sir. Good to see everybody.
You too, sir.
Thank you. All right, so I'd like to just share. This week is, as we know, between Pesach and Shavuos, so we read Pirkei Avos, one parak a week. So this year kind of like gone back to it a little bit and tried to look into things a little bit. So over the course of this parak, you know, it's unclear when it goes through Pirkei Avos what the order is, and it seems to be in somewhat random. Is there a distinction between each chapter? Sometimes it might just be a distinction between the era in which the Tanaim, the era in which the people that are being talked about in that chapter when they lived. It's unclear when things are divided up. But if one goes over the course of the third chapter, which is this week's chapter, so there is a common theme that keeps popping up, and that is the idea of Talmud Torah. That is the idea of learning Torah and figuring out the timing, or really learning Torah in a world where there are other things to do besides learning Torah. There are other things to do in terms of things that we enjoy. There are other things to do in terms of things that we would like to do. And then there are other things to do in this world that there are things that, like, you have to do. For example, right? Earning a living. Other mitzvos, other things that we have to do as part of our avodas Hashem, as part of serving Hashem, besides just Talmud Torah. So how do those fit together? So there is an idea of Talmud Torah always done, right? It's something we should be constantly doing, but yet obviously in a world where that is an impossibility. It's clearly physically an impossibility. So how do we deal with that? How do we put everything in its appropriate place? So take a look at a couple of Mishnayos that appear over the course of this parak, and we'll see what we come up with. So I'm having a little trouble finding things in this copy of Pirkei Avos that we have. Let me just find it here. No, not there. I thought I had it here. There is a Mishnah that says as follows, and there it is. Okay, so in Mishnah Dalet, or sometimes it's in Mishnah Hey, and sometimes it's a Mishnah Vav. So it says as follows: Rav Chanina ben Chachinai Omer, so Haneir Belaila, that one who stays up at night, Vamahalich Bederek Yichidi, somebody who walks by themselves on the road or walks on a lonely path, Umifane Libo Levatala, and leaves his heart open for waste. What happens to such a person? Hareza Mischayev Benasho. So this person is, how do we translate that? I don't know. He's responsible for his life. It's kind of
his ownership.
You are hereby responsible, as they say in the business. You are on notice as to things that may come about as a result. So, what are these three things? What have you done that are so bad? So, haneir b'layil, you've stayed up all night, and you walk by yourself. And then, finally, Bulavatala. So, some Rishonim just read that as those are three separate things that you're doing. If you stay up all night and therefore you end up sleeping through the whole day, or you constantly are just walking by yourself and you're putting yourself in dangerous situations, so those are not good things to do. You're ultimately going to hurt yourself, something bad is going to happen. But then, what does Umafanali Bulavatala mean? That you're leaving your heart empty, you're letting it, what is that? So some Rishonim say no. Umafana Liva Levatala, this last one, letting your heart go, how do they translate? It turns his heart to idleness, is actually going on the first two things that are there. So Haneir Belaila, if one is up at night, or you're by yourself, and you leave your heart empty, meaning you don't bother to do anything at that time, you just kind of waste your time, stare into space. So that's Hareza Mischai Benasho. Then you are on notice. Then bad things, then whatever happens to you is your responsibility. And many of you shown a place. So what is it that you're supposed to do? I'm finally able to tell us what you're not supposed to do. What is it? There might be something as downtime. But before you get to the downtime, let's just get to the uptime. Right, what is the uptime supposed to be? So when one has free time, when one has time that they have available, when nothing else is going on, you're staring up in space at night, not able to go to sleep, totally by yourself, and you don't have the need to use it as time for relaxing. Yeah, we find ourselves in the car, and for some of us, that is a relaxing moment in the day. That's okay, now I don't have to worry about anything, I'm not going to talk on the phone right now, I'm going to be by myself. that might be downtime. But I think what the Mishnah is saying is, if it's not downtime, if you've already, you're good right now, you actually don't have something else you need to be spending your time on right now, and you just decide that, well, I'm just going to go ahead and waste it, so that's when one perhaps has some responsibility on their head. There is I'll just say one more piece on this, and then we'll discuss a little bit.
Okay.
There is a famous piece that the Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky has in the Sefer Emes LeYaakov, that Rav Shmuel's father, those might not be Rav Shmuel sitting shiva right now, for his brother Rav Binyamin Kamenetsky, who is the Rav in Farakli, now that was the doggy
there.
Right in South Shore, so Rav Shmuel is sitting shiva. So at one point today, I was there at the shiva call, and somebody asked him. He was talking about challenges that his brother had, and he said, "So when your brother had a challenge, who was the posik that he turned to with questions?" And like Rav Shmuel looked at him and says, "His father, like my father." So that's referring to Rav Yaakov. That's Rav Shmuel's father. So Rav Yaakov has a piece where he quotes the Medrash that talks about that there are 70 years between the first piece of Migdash and the second piece of Migdash. So the Medrash says that if you do the math, and this is based on psukim that appear in the first Tochacha, in the list of curses, that is the equivalent to the amount of Shemitahs that there were during the first base of Migdash. During the first base of Migdash, there were 70 Shemitahs. That means that every seventh year, you're supposed to let the land lay fallow, and apparently they didn't observe the Shemitah properly. So because they didn't observe the Shemitah properly, therefore the land laid fallow for 70 years, and that was the separation between the first and second base of Migdash. So Rav Yaakov says, wait a second, you're telling me that nobody did any Shemitah for that entire time? Like, they never got it right? Like, what does that mean? At some point, they probably got it right over the course of that time. So he suggests that what is the point of Shemitah? The point of Shemitah, A, is to let the land lay fallow. And then what are you supposed to do during that time? So that means we just go on vacation, we travel the world, we party for the entire year. So we might party for part of the year, we might vacation for part of the year, we might travel for part of the year, but part of that time is certainly supposed to be spent towards spiritual rejuvenation, just as the land is resting and the land is rejuvenating itself, so too we're supposed to be rejuvenating themselves. So Yaakov says that's the part that wasn't observed. It's not, they might have technically kept the laws of Shemitah. They might have technically let the land lay fallow during that entire time, but did they take the advantage personally? So perhaps not. And he goes on and says, and this is the part that perhaps you were scared before, this is the part that's scary, that when you get called up to Shemayim, the Kadosh Baruch says, why didn't you learn everything you were supposed to learn? Right? Why didn't you do all the mitzvahs you're supposed to do? And you say, what am I supposed to do? I have to earn a living, I have to raise a family, I have to take care of my kids, and this kid had to bring him to the baseball game, and I had to so I have my whole long list of excuses. The Kadosh Baruch says, okay, those are all good excuses as to why you couldn't learn during those times. But there were times when you had open. And during the open time, did you do what was appropriate? If I could say yes, so then that's a good excuse. It covers you for everything else. But if your answer is no, so then that puts aside any possible excuse one could have for the rest of the time. So that is idea number one. Haneir Balaila, that if one stays up the entire night and Hamafana Libu Levatala and ends up letting their heart feel empty, meaning they don't bother cracking a book open, they don't bother looking for some sort of mitzvah to do, so then you're on notice, because then you don't have an excuse for the rest of the time as well. Yeah?
I was just going to say that from a more practical earthen perspective, I think that somebody, for example, who has a mental illness such as depression, PTSD, or another psychiatric condition that somehow they would have, I would gather,
granted,
not to sound blasphemous or anything, but a modicum of absolution.
Sure. Okay. No. If you have a reason, the point is that he's making, that I think Rav Yaakov was making, is if you have an excuse, you have an excuse. If it's a good excuse. But if the time that you don't have the excuse, you still don't take advantage of that time, so then that perhaps then reveals what your ideas were really, even when you were covered by the excuses. All right, that's thought number one. As we move along here, so there is another Mishnah here, if you could find it, Rabbi Yaakov, I believe. Where was it? It was... Yes?
How does one go about spiritual rejuvenation
Is it each to their own, or is it you're supposed to go in the base of Midrash and learn and Torah and this and whatever the other rabbi says, or is there actually something to it?
What do you mean something to it?
Spiritual rejuvenation, something you're supposed to do during this Shemitah year. Is there something you're specifically, like, you know, for Chagim, we read a specific thing. Is there something during Shemitah year we read that's supposed to kind of level us
out? That idea that Rav Yaakov was presenting, I think he sort of built it in, from what I recall, as I'm supposed to go and learn in the Beis Medrash and go back to yeshiva. But that, you're right, I don't know if that's appropriate for everybody. You know, but whatever a person finds that they're supposed to do, they're supposed to do. But you know, if there are other 6 years, your entire life is revolving around the physical work of farming the field, so then that seventh year should be revolving around the spiritual work of dealing with your connection with Hashem, if you're not able to do the other 6 years. Right? I mean, yes, we have Shabbos the other 6 years, and we have Yom Tov the other 6 years. Right? Correct. Right. So you have six and then seven. So it's the same six and seven cycle. Right. It's the same. It's working at the same proportions. Okay.
It's possible that some people maybe feel lost in the mainstream, and they feel like, well, here's, you know, 1,000,000,000 other people who are doing this thing, and they seem to be doing good at it. So I should just try to fit in to do what they're doing, when, you know, another person might be different and he needs.
Right, whatever.
Different kind of a connection.
Sure. That's the way he wrote, you know, the sefer that Emes Liakov is, I believe, I'm not sure, I think those are probably things that he probably gave over in yeshiva, when he was through yeshiva Torah V'das. That's probably where a lot of it comes from. So in the Musar Shmuz, as you give in a yeshiva, you got to talk about, you better be your morning seder on time, you better be on time for davening, and that's what you talk about there. But I think when you get talk about people in other areas of life, so whatever it is, you make sure that you take some time out to think, take some time out to, you know, daven, establish that relationship, make sure you take some time out to do chesed, wherever that realm is in Avodas Hashem. They say make sure that you use that time in the best possible way. I think that's what the message is, whatever that possible way might be. You're right, not everybody's cut out to, I have a year off, let me go learn 10 hours a day in yeshiva. I don't know if that will work for everybody. People won't be able to handle that, but you have the whole day off, so an hour should be spent learning yeshiva, and the rest of the day could be spent doing other types of ways that would rejuvenate the mind and soul and body for the 6 years to come. All right. So there's another line here as well. Rabbi Yaakov Omer, Hamahalich b'derech v'shoneh, that if a person is walking on the road and he he's learning, he's got his Torah tape going. It's in his ears, he got his MP3 that he downloaded from YU Torah, probably, Torah Downloads or one of the other sites. Right? Umafsik Mishnaso, and he stops learning the Omer, and he says, Mana'a Ilan Zeh, Umana'a Nirzeh. And he says, wow, what a beautiful tree. Or he says, how beautiful is that plowed field? When first I read that, I was like, what? Why is a plowed field beautiful? If you've ever been, a summer and a half ago, I was on a mission, a Federation mission to Israel. That was the last time I was in Israel. And we drove, we were down south, actually near Gaza. And you're driving around and you see there are wheat fields down there. And it's like beautiful. You know? It's like, wow, the things are growing in the land of Israel. You know, it's really a great thing. So ma'alav akasav ki'ilu, again, uses this term, mischayv v'nafsho. You're hereby mischayv v'nafsho. You're hereby also, as we said before, you're on notice, right? Whatever happens to you is hereby your responsibility. So that didn't sound too bad. Maybe I'm driving around, I'm trying to learn, trying to have a discussion in Torah, and then I say, wow, look at that tree. Nice tree. He just sort of goes tree and field. I say nice mountain. So how does one work that out? So there is an idea, and the hardcore way of explaining this is, that's right. If you're in the middle of learning, you get interrupted for nothing. That's not supposed to interrupt you. You're not supposed to stop. You're supposed to be focused.
You're not supposed to say God bless yourself.
Right, except many do, because if you don't, so then it reveals, you know, that's as if I'm saying that I really am and I'm really not. You know, there's a whole story there. Yes, but
I'm always scared to say it.
But right, but that's the idea. If I'm in the middle of learning, so I'm supposed to be interrupted by nothing. Right, and there are people. If you I remember when I was in yeshiva, so I didn't have any place to go for sukkah, so I had a friend that happened to be in the mirror. So I slept in the mirror sukkah over a sukkah my year in yeshiva. And I think I stayed up all night, Oshana Rabba night, so people do that. You know, especially when you're a Oshana Aleph guy, you stay up all night, you run around the city, you go daven at the Kotel. So then I went to sleep. And I think I woke up, and there was Rav Yaakov Moshe Katz. I don't know if you remember. Rav Yaakov Moshe Katz is one of the Rabbanim in Mir. He's known for his hasmada. He's known for his diligence, and he's just sitting there learning, not looking up, like right on top of my bed. Like, I wake up, and like there he is. And you know, that was 3 hours after I got to sleep, so I rolled over back to sleep. I woke up a few hours later, and there he was. He had not moved. He had not budged. He was, you know, sitting like this. They're just in complete concentration for all of those hours. So yeah, that's one idea. But there is, and actually I came across the story today that apparently Rav Chaim Volozhiner, who was the founder of the Volozhin Yeshiva, he walked into Yeshiva and he saw two guys having a philosophical debate. So he walks up in the middle of the night, if you're in the base medrash late at night, it's amazing what people could be fighting about. So these two guys are fighting, and he listens closely, and they're fighting about, right, what would be considered a trick of the Yetzer Hara? What the latest tricks of the Yetzer Hara are? That's what they're fighting about. So he kind of walks over to them and says, you know, if you're here, go learn. What are you doing? They said, oh, we're talking about the Yetzer Hara. Now, I know you could say, well, that itself is Torah, but all right, in his mind, we're supposed to be learning Gemara, Shas, Poskim, etc. So he says, yeah, the Yetzer Hara doesn't care if you're talking about him. He's thrilled that you're talking about him, as long as you don't have the Gemara open. Right? So that is one approach to this Mishnah is exactly what it sounds like. If you're learning, interrupt for nothing. So there is a beautiful story in this book, Rav Yehuda Amital. Have you ever heard the name, Rav Yehuda Amital?
I have not heard of it.
Rav Yehuda Amital was, you heard of Aaron Lichtenstein? Amital. You heard of Aaron Lichtenstein?
Yeah.
Who was Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva Har Etzion, what's known as Gush. So Rav Amital was his partner. They were both co-Rosh Yeshiva for all those years. Rav Amital actually was the founder. Rav Amital was soon after the Six-Day War, which we're about to celebrate the 50th anniversary of. Soon after the Six-Day War, that's the area they wanted to resettle, right? That is where that was where there were the 30, I'm forgetting how many right now, 30-something people were killed. That was an area, that Etzion block was an area under Jewish hands during the mandate period, before the state, and an Erev, about Dalet Iyar, I believe Dalet Iyar in 1948, the day before the state was founded, they were holding off their Jordanian army and trying to protect Yerushalayim, and ultimately they tried to surrender, and they were all rounded up, and they were all killed, which is obviously a war crime and all that kind of thing, but they were executed in cold blood. You could go there today, you could see the bunker where they were killed, etc. Yeah, where'd you go? You went to Miftar or something?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Exactly.
Right, so that area.
So you know Rav Shlomo Vilk, the Jewish yeshiva?
No, I don't really know much about it, but I figured if it wasn't Gush, it probably was a Miftar.
Because a lot of them went over to Gush and learned a little bit. So
there's a famous...
I walk over with them,
yeah,
and I learned with them in the Israelis to pick up my Hebrew.
Oh.
I didn't understand a lick of the word for almost half a year. And besides, these guys were really smart, a lot smarter than I was. I just want to say I learned Hebrew, but some of the stuff I learned about after I picked up the Hebrew.
Right.
It was incredible.
Yeah. You went to there, to Yeshiva Har Etzion, right?
Yeah, we walked over, and the shul was beautiful.
Right.
I had friends that went there.
So Rav Amital passed away a few years ago. So after the 67 war, they approached him as being the, would you be the Rosh Yeshiva in this new yeshiva want to start up? And he did. I'm not sure, I got to review the book, how exactly he got Rav Aaron Lichtenstein on board. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, first Yurtzeit around now, maybe second year. His first Yurtzeit is around now. You have to realize he left. He was in line to be the next Rav Soloveitchik. He was in line to be the next leader of modern Orthodox Judaism in America, and he left it to go to literally a trailer. Right? It wasn't we're going in this big yeshiva's built up. You're going to go and you're going to learn in this like old airport hangar that has no air conditioning and no heat, and it's an amazing amount of mesiras nefesh of sacrifice that one can one can contribute to him. But anyways, yeah.
I say you reminded me of something that happened when I was a kid growing up, in my Jewish walk, mind you. I remember I was raised Reform, and there was all these talks and scare tactics that I would overhear. Oh, we're going to have to hold services in someone's basement. And then lo and behold, there's a grown adult. I remember I would go from, you know, 2008 to 2012, I went to a Lubavitch shul in Alexandria, Virginia, in the basement of the Shuliach's house.
It happened, right.
So
there are worse things, yes.
Well, no, but you know,
but this was not just the basement. This was nothing. This was like whatever. And he built it up from nothing. So the famous story goes that it's told in the first chapter of this book. Is that when it came time, all right, so now we're going to have the yeshiva, we have a funder, somebody's going to give us money, maybe, and we got to go get talmidim, right? You need money, and you also need talmidim. So he goes into one of the top high schools in Israel, and they're looking at him, like, these are guys that are about to go to, you know, the top yeshivas, HaKotel, or Keren Biavne, or Panovich, or, you know, the top yeshivas in Israel, they're ready to go, and he says, why don't you try my yeshiva? We're going to go to this land where there's nothing there. There may or may not be running water. There may or may not be heat. But you're going to come. And they said, okay, so what style of learning are you going to like? What's the learning going to be like? So he said, yeah, I'll tell you. So there's a famous story of the Alter Rebbe. Alter Rebbe Shneur Zalman, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe. That he was learning, the story goes, he was learning in one room. And his grandson, Tzemach Tzedek, was learning in the next room. So it was Alter Rebbe, Tzemach Tzedek, and then in the back room over here was the Tzemach Tzedek's child, right? The baby. The baby was sleeping. So Alter Rebbe is learning, Tzemach Tzedek's also learning, and then you have the child sleeping. Child wakes up. The Tzemach Tzedek is sitting and learning, and he doesn't hear the baby crying. The Alter Rebbe gets up, goes, takes care of the baby, and on his way out, stops by his grandson, Tzemach Tzedek, and says, he said, what? He said, you know, your baby was crying, but don't worry, I went and took care of him. So he said, I must have been concentrating so hard that I didn't hear him. To which the Alter Rebbe said, if your learning doesn't permit you to hear the cry of a young baby, that's not good learning.
Really?
Right? So perhaps using that story, and that was his message, that he said, that's the way my yeshiva is going to be. My yeshiva is going to be learning, but we're going to have our eyes open to see how that can help the world around us. So perhaps that then explains what this mission is. You're learning, and you just manna ilan, and you say, oh wow, what a beautiful tree. And you interrupt your learning. So it says refresh, the problem there is not that you stopped to notice this tree. The problem is that, very good, who'd you give the credit to? Who'd you give the credit to? If the recognizing the tree is a stoppage, if the recognizing the tree is my Torah is here, and wow, that's really cool, over there, so then that's a problem. But if your learning here incorporates the tree, you say, Ma na ilan zeh, how wonderful is this ilan, which was a creation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? If you look out at the field and you say, not just, oh, what a neat field, that's amazing, but you say, wow, look at Eretz Yisrael coming alive. Look at the stuff that grows that comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Look at the miracles that are happening today that all come from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So then that's not distinct from your learning. That's incorporated in your learning. And perhaps that's the way to understand that middle Mishnah. And then with that idea, we could then understand perhaps the most famous Mishnah in this parak, which comes more towards the end, and that is Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Omer, Imein Torah ein Derech Eretz, Imein Derech Eretz ein Torah. That if there's no Torah, there's no Derech Eretz. If there's no Derech Eretz, there's no Torah. It also talks about if there's no Chachma, there's no Yiran, and Kemach ein Torah, and if there's no... So what does Derech Eretz mean? So Derech Eretz often means, it could mean a couple things. It could mean the way you act amongst one another. Derech Eretz is also used to talk about the way of earning a living, living in the world, things like that. So what does it mean? And it goes backwards. If there's no Torah, there's no Derech Eretz. If there's no Derech Eretz, there's no Torah. So the Tiferes Yisrael is a commentary that appears on all the Mishnayos. And the Tiferes Yisrael, Rav Yisrael Lifshitz, he was a Rav in the 1800s. He actually, if you learn through his commentary, he is a pretty progressive thinker. He has a couple of pretty prominent comments that he makes that make people uncomfortable. Things like, dinosaur bones, sure, they existed during the time of Noah, and the reason why the dating is off is because the flood messed with the boiling water, right? That's the Pharisees' role. He has a couple of things that are very interesting. So he makes the comment here, he says, yeah, because the two affect one another. Im ein Torah, ein derech eretz. If there is no Torah, so then what's going to be your work with other people? The way you deal with other people is going to be lacking, because I'm going to be lax in Torah, so I'm going to be a good person. Yeah, but you're not going to be as good a person as you could be if you would have been able to enhance it with Torah. And then the opposite is true as well. In derech eretz, in Torah, if there's no derech eretz, if you're not going to be kind to people, you're not going to be nice to people. So it's not just, oh well, at least I have Torah. No, even your Torah is lacking, because your Torah has to be incorporating all those other things as well. What is that?
I had a discussion with this guy and a few other people.
What, just now?
A couple weeks ago.
Uh-huh. All right, so anyway, let me just review, and then we'll talk a little bit more. So just to review, three Mishnayos. Number one, the first Mishnah was right. Hamafan libo levatal, that you're up at night and you're not, and your heart is empty. No, your heart because you should be. That's during a time when everything is open and where you do have the opportunity, you have no excuses, and if you're still not using it, so then that becomes a problem, and that perhaps reveals your intentions even when you do have the excuses as well. The manai ilanze, how wonderful is this tree? Yeah, that's a problem if it's interrupting your Torah, unless that becomes part of your Torah, unless you comment that, oh, manai, look how wonderful that tree, which our Kadosh Baruch Hu made. And then that explains the last part, in Torah, in derech eretz, the two work together. What you do in the Torah, it has to do with derech eretz, they have to all be incorporate one another, so that everything that we do becomes one inclusive thing, and even the things that we do during the day, the work that we do, the moving that we do, all the driving that we do, all the hanging out that we do, all of it becomes part of a living a life of Torah, and Torah is incorporated with all that as well. All right. All right. Are you having me?
Okay.